Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Hi and welcome to Freedom of Species, where the show that brings animal advocacy to the airwaves of 3CR community radio. Before us you heard Sally with Out of the Pan. And Sally was interviewing Christine DeSaney on the Trans Coffee Table book, Transpired. Check out of the Pan every Sunday, 12 till 1. And on the show today, we're going to be discussing pop culture and animal rights, sort of representations of animal rights in the media. We're going to be discussing an episode of BoJack Horseman. We're also going to be discussing the book or manga, The Darwin Incident by Shun Yumezawa. And to discuss this with me, I am Nick, I always forget to say that, but to join me, I'm Ruby. Welcome back to the show.
Hello, thanks for having me.
And Claire is joining us for the first time.
Hi, nice to be here.
And yeah, we often start with a bit of an introduction in terms of your thinking or action towards animals and how that may have changed over the years. Yeah, I think back to myself in my childhood, I feel like I already was a vegan, in a philosophical vegan, I guess. Like my attitudes, I didn't want to cause any harm to animals. I don't really feel like I felt I was above or more important than animals. But as most of us, I was... yeah, eating animal products because that was what most people were doing. But it wasn't really a change of mindset. It was more just, you know, behaving in a way that was consistent with values I already had. So, yeah, feel free to turn the clock back as far as you like. But how has your thinking and or actions towards animals changed over the years?
It's changed, I would say, a lot. I grew up in a pretty carnist family, no thoughts towards animals at all.
And carnism, for anyone who's not familiar, I guess, is sort of the attitudes of eating animals, but also eating certain animals, so not eating dogs, but eating pigs, for example, that kind of thing. Yeah,
it's something I've picked up through becoming a vegan, just like saying carnist. If we have a term, I feel like they should have a term as well, you know? But yeah, definitely... not really thinking about animals too much. Like, I grew up, you know, with the media. Like, I think the most common example is that episode of The Simpsons where Lisa becomes vegetarian. Mm-hmm. So I had that kind of exposure, but because of the way I was raised, like, that didn't really impact my life, just because, you know, obviously the people around you are going to do that a lot more than some episode you watched when you were 5 years old. But yeah, so yeah, had that view. And then, yeah, Ruby became vegan. And I would probably say that had a lot of influence. I was that person where she would tell me she was vegan and she would give me all these facts. And I was like, oh, but I love meat so much. It's so nice. And then, yeah, someone came into my mum's life. And let's just say we had a few arguments. And arguing with this person actually led me to sort of go into my own thoughts a bit more and, like, use my open-mindedness to sort of expand my thinking and think all of that. And yeah, just like being exposed to this person that I was so against sort of helped me realize how wrong it was to eat meat and just other parts, like environmentally and all that. And so one day I just, you know, had a really bad sausage roll. It was soggy, it was disgusting. I was like, you know what, that's it. I'm done with this. Time to go vegan.
Yeah. And when you switched over to vegan, you mentioned loving meat, and most of us who weren't vegan from the start, you know, enjoy certain animal products or did enjoy them. But did you switch over to plant-based meats, or has it more been finding new foods or a bit of both? Or
at the start, I would definitely say I was trying to find, you know, plant-based meats. But honestly, going forward, like, it's not something that I'm really fussed with either. Even like the switch, like, yeah, switching out, you just think, okay, what's an alternative to this that I could use? And then gradually as I went on, I'm just like, oh, it's not even really that, like, nice to have. I realized a lot of meat, it's just like, the reason I liked it is probably because of all of the salt it's covered in and all of the flavors that come with it. Like, when you roast something, you always put rosemary or salt on top. You don't... I don't think you really have it just by itself.
Yeah.
And then that's like a realization where I'm just like, oh, okay, so the meat wasn't even good itself. It's just like all of the flavors that come with it.
Yeah, yeah. So I remember I was just a few days ago, I was walking my dog around the neighborhood and there was like some sort of like animal flesh that had kind of fallen out of my packet, out of the packet, and the dog, my dog was quite interested in it. But yeah, it's, it was just like maybe chicken or something like that, but it was just kind of sat there and I was like, this looks so unappetizing. And it would have before, I remember as a non-vegan, like I always found was a bit grossed out by like the blood in the packet when I bought like the, you know, cow product or whatever. And then I only liked it when it was sort of transformed so far from what it actually is. And yeah, I was actually thinking about that. I was like, well, that isn't at all like, you know, it's not nice. Like it's not desirable, at least for most people. And then what makes it desirable, as you say, is the salt, is the herbs, is the spices, is the flavors. And so we can just put them on plant-based, you know, whatever, tofu or whatever. Yeah, plant-based products. And then it still tastes good because it's still got the same stuff that makes the meat taste good as well. Yeah, well, let's get straight into the show. So we're going to start off with BoJack Horseman. So Ruby, this is one that you've brought in today. Do you want to maybe set up a little bit about the episode before we start playing some bits and discussing it?
Yeah, sure. So BoJack Horseman is a show on Netflix. It's an animated series and the protagonist is a, like, they're all like anthropomorphized animals is like the universe that it's set in. So there's a mixture of like humans and then there's also, yeah, horses, dogs, cats, sheep, like all kinds of animals, bugs as well are also anthropomorphized. And so this episode is basically takes place in season 2 of BoJack Horseman. And it's just kind of like a one-off that goes a bit more into how, you know, meat consumption is, I guess, conceptualized in this like universe where there's all kinds of different animals. The writer, Raphael Bob Waksberg, is actually a vegan himself. And there's kind of also other references throughout the show to like, you know, what, how this kind of like animal, how animal consumption works in a universe where all of the animals are anthropomorphized. So, you know, there'll be like a cow, like pumping breast milk at the diner for a customer, stuff like that. But, yeah, in this episode, there's this kind of like mega corporation, kind of like a KFC or McDonald's substitute called Chicken 4 Days.
Mm-hmm.
And, at the start of the episode, Chicken 4 Days has like a car crash that BoJack causes accidentally, and a truck from Chicken 4 Days crashes, and then a chicken escapes, who then finds her way to the house of a protagonist in the series, who then kind of takes this chicken under his wing, so to speak, and yeah, tries to rescue her. And should we?
Yeah, we can get... I did want to say, actually, before we play it, though, I've never seen the show. I've just watched this one episode because Ruby mentioned it for the show, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was, like, I felt like the animal rights message was really strong, but it also, it felt like a comedy show as well. Like, yes. It was funny. It wasn't like, let's take a break from this comedy show to, like, promote animal rights. I felt like it managed to sort of walk that line really well of, yeah, still being very funny as a comedy, but, again, a very strong animal rights message. So maybe we'll play this this scene, which is talking about, yeah, specifically that sort of factory farm chicken, the Chicken 4 Days. And so this is like a news anchor interviewing the CEO from that company.
How do you respond to allegations that factory farming is torture or cruel or like a terrifying movie about some strange dystopian society, but in this monster story, the horrifying monsters are us?
Relax, Tommy. Everything we do is completely legal and FDA approved, so therefore it is fine.
I have no follow-up questions.
did you watch this one as well, Claire?
Yeah, I've seen the full 6 seasons of the show.
Oh, have you? Okay, great. Yeah,
we did have a little fresher, go back to the episode just to make sure it was clear in our minds.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, just the no follow-up comments is very much, yeah, it's just like, you know what, if it's legal, it's fine. We don't have to dig into it. We don't have to see what's wrong with the laws that we have in place.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I thought that was such a good point. I think that is a reason why animal consumption continues, because it's legal, therefore it must be moral, despite all the horrible things throughout history and today that are illegal but still very harmful to individuals. I would also add, and maybe this is me as a sociologist, but the fact that it's legal and the majority of people are doing it, I think those two things combined, I was kind of thinking of that clip and thinking back to the marriage equality discussion in Australia, where it was like, The law was anti-marriage equality, I think, until 2017, but there was quite a few years there where the majority supported marriage equality. So as much as, like, the law wasn't on your side, the law was on your side to have a homophobic view, like, society wasn't on your side, but in the case of animal consumption, you've got the law on your side, and you've also got, like, the majority of society on your side as well, and I think that plays a huge impact as well.
Yeah.
I do feel like there's, like, a bit of a difference between that, because with marriage equality, if someone else marries, you know, if two men marry, that only really affects their lives. Where if we had an animal law come in to say, you know, slaughter's now illegal, that would affect everyone who consumes meat.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I always think back to there's a band called Propagandhi, who are a Canadian punk band who are very outspoken about animal rights, but also so many other issues. And they were like, I remember they got asked once, like, how come you talk about all these issues and radical views, etc., and like veganism is the one thing you get pushback on? And they were saying, well, it kind of asks more of individuals. I guess if they're sort of calling out, you know, if they're calling out other things, US imperialism or something like that, you can go, yep, I'm against US imperialism now. yes, you might go along to a protest, something like that, but it doesn't necessarily inherently kind of impact your life to kind of side with their position on those other issues. But yeah, when it comes to veganism, they're like, well, it affects you at least three times a day in terms of that. So yeah, I think there is that, yeah, kind of asking more of people. I did want to say as well that I feel like the factory farm angle, I feel like if this episode, if it was just factory farming is bad and like intensively farming chickens are bad, I would probably at this point have like a bit of an eye roll. I'd probably be like, right. Yeah, that's true. But like, that's kind of, most people are already at that view already. But what I really like this about this episode in particular is that they really went after the free range, the humane, et cetera. So we're going to play an ad they played for Gentle Farms. Anything you need to say to set this up, Ruby?
So Gentle Farms is kind of contrasted with Chicken for Days. And so like the episode starts with like a back-to-back ad of like Chicken for Days and then Gentle Farms. And the Gentle Farms ad is like a chicken for days. They coop their chickens up in like factory cages, and we don't do that at Gentle Farms. And Gentle Farms is actually run by chickens. So, and the way they set it up at the beginning is the Gentle Farms chickens say, well, you know, this isn't a regular. Is this the ad you're about to play?
It is.
Okay, there you go. So yeah. we'll play it. Yeah.
Over at Chicken for Days, they pump their chickens full of hormones and keep them cooped up in tiny cages. Now, as a chicken, this concerns me. Here at Gentle Farms, we treat our livestock differently. Lush fields, plenty of dignity, and foosball. The chickens here have wonderful lives before we harvest them so you can eat them.
But wait, Pa, aren't we chickens? I don't want to get eaten.
Boy, these animals aren't like us. They're specifically bred to be eaten and genetically modified for maximum flavor. When our chicks are first hatched, we lovingly inject them with natural, delicious hormones, which makes them meat, thereby erasing any moral gray area. Now, you can feel good about eating our meat. It's simple. No one knows chicken like chickens. Gentle Farms.
Do you think it's worth playing the bit where they sort of rethink it now as well?
Yeah, definitely. Ends up happening is that... they decide, so the main characters decide to take Becca, this chicken that they've kind of adopted, to Gentle Farms because she's a fugitive from the law. They don't really know what else to do with her. So they end up taking her to Gentle Farms, dropping her off there and then kind of leaving. And as they do, one of the chickens who's running the farms like pulls out his gun and says, that chicken belongs to us now. And so then they have a moment of reflection in the car.
Those farmers seem nice.
Yeah, I think Becca will be really happy there.
She'll have a nice life.
Yeah, until they kill her.
Well, yeah, but of all the places that we'll eventually kill her, Gentle Farms seems like the best.
This doesn't feel right. Becca was our friend.
Did either of you go down the sort of so-called humane animal products road before going vegan, or was it straight to...
I think my parents kind of always were kind of more into, you know, animal welfare, I think. I grew up with, like, very, like, environmentalist, hippie parents. We always got free-range eggs, and they always tried to buy, like, the chicken products that were, like, free-range and, yeah, like, responsibly sourced things. But, yeah, I think, you know, it was definitely something that I thought about. I was like, well, I guess this is better, you know. But then I kind of became vegan, and then looking into, like, animal rights and animal liberation literature was like, well, it's still unnecessary. It's still unnecessary suffering. And, yeah, at the end of the day, like, they all end up in, you know, the slaughterhouse, which is a horrible place to be. And they're still, you know, raised purely for slaughter, and at the expense of their own health as well. Like, a lot of these chickens who are raised for meat, I mean, they call it hormones in BoJack Horseman. I don't think that we do that in Australia, but they are kind of genetically, they're bred to put on as much weight as possible, as fast as possible. And they are chicks when they are killed. Like, they only, it's only like a few weeks, really. So if you see, like, footage of these animals in slaughterhouses, these chickens, they're like, they're not making, like, clucking noises like they, like Becca does in BoJack Horseman. They're making chirping noises because they're babies.
And I like the sort of juxtaposition, how they had the foosball table kind of like parodying the humane thing, but, like, in behind that they had, like, the slaughter shed as well. Yeah. And it's just interesting, like, whenever you see those commercials, they don't highlight that aspect of it. What about you, Claire? Did you go, or was it straight sort of to, from, you know, conventional animal products to veganism?
Me personally, I did the cold turkey straight from
no more cold turkey
to vegan. I know growing up, mum would, I don't think she ever said anything, but there were a lot of ads at the time, just like the Gentle Farm ads, where you would see these animals in that advertisement advertising their own product. And that was very, considering I remember it, I feel like it was very prominent, especially in Australia, and I'm sure a lot of people would have been influenced by that and gone, oh yeah, it's good for them, so I'll go get this product from the shop instead of the caged eggs.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. Sorry, just to jump in, like, when you see products like Laughing Cow cheese and things like that, I didn't realize, but hearing you say that kind of made me realize that this is also kind of a commentary on, like, having these, like, happy animals on, like, that look like they're advertising, like, their own bodies.
Yeah, you go to, like, a charcoal chicken shop, anything like that, and you see this friendly cartoon animal that's just, like, happily selling themselves off to you.
Yeah, and I really liked in the ad how they were like, these are not the chickens for eating, like, as if they're like, we often do that, like, we, you know, socially, like, different societies go, like, that's an eating animal and that's not, and, like, we often talk about, like, in Australia, for example, like, oh, people eat animals, and actually, and, like, this goes back to carnism, which you mentioned, like, most people don't eat most animals. There's only quite a select few who have been, like, arbitrarily put in the, like, the food category, and but they're still just as sentient and capable of feeling and value their lives and those kind of issues. It was interesting because often we think about that category as animals, but even within the category of chicken, it's like, oh no, they're not the ones you eat, even though, again, there's no difference in them as well. It kind of reminds me back to, like, animal testing I've heard a bit over the years, where this is probably more in the US context, where, like, they even use dogs who are stolen, like, stolen pets in animal testing. And I'm like, that is horrible, and I get why that kind of rings home, because you kind of think of your own dog, etc. But also, like, if you just breed a dog or a rat or any, you know, chimpanzee, like, any species, like, for the sake of animal testing, like, it's just as bad, really. And it kind of feels, it goes back to that thing of like, well, we've placed them, their use is like companionship, so they shouldn't be used for testing, and they're bred for testing, therefore that's okay. So I really like the way they sort of highlighted these sort of arbitrary uses we assign to animals.
Mm, yeah, because I think another thing this episode shows is like, yeah, it looks all happy on the outside, like they have all this green meadows and all that stuff. But if you look at the actual chicken, it's no longer, like, all of the animals in the show are meant to be intelligent. Mm. So even though they're giving them all of this enjoyment, they've still dumbed down this chicken to not be intelligent anymore.
Mm.
So they're still affecting their lives.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's something that's probably happens in real life. You're like, yeah, free-range chickens still have all that space, but they've still been put in the place where they're not how they should have been.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I feel like when the guy in the car was like, she's our friend, we can't do this, and I feel like any, you know, like Yetz is sort of this token of like they're lowly, they're right at the bottom of the hierarchy, but we'll give them like a tiny bit of consideration. You'd tend towards the more like free range, humane, whatever. Mm. But like any meaningful consideration for animals, it should mean actually not sort of using and eating them at all. Mm. And yeah, I really like the way they really drove home that point pretty strongly throughout the episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's play a song. This is one Ruby's chosen, so Kangaroo by Remy Wolf. Anything you want to say about the song, Ruby?
Oh, this is actually Claire's choice.
Oh, is it? Okay, go ahead, Claire.
There's not much to say. It's not vegan.
Yeah.
It's not really about kangaroos either.
Yeah.
But just thought, yeah, seems the most fitting. Gives us a good image of kangaroos anyway.
Yeah, cool. All right.
Freedom of Species thanks Animal Free Science Advocacy for their financial support of this program. Animal Free Science Advocacy works to create a future where no animals are harmed in the name of science, and scientific progress is advanced through animal-free research methods. Become a member today by visiting animalfreesci.org.au. That's animalfreesci.org.au.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species on 3CR Community Radio. You just heard the song Kangaroo by Remy Wolf, and we are discussing representations of animal rights in the media, particularly anthropomorphized animals, has sort of been an incidental theme, it turns out. I did want to briefly mention a bit of feedback on a previous show. This is sitting in my computer for a long time. This was actually a show me and Harley did many years ago, 2022 actually, but horror movies and challenging the human-animal dichotomy. And we did hear from Jamie from Sentientism podcast, and they have social media groups and those kind of things, but pass on an article after we did that show that I'll put a link to in the notes. But there's an article called Animal Horror, an Investigation into Animal Rights, Horror Cinema, and the Double Standards of Violent Human Behavior by Gunnar Theodor Egertsen. And basically the article is a retelling of the story of the now legendary serial killer Ed Gein, whose work inspired at least three generations of horror cinema. His story provides a paradigm example of speciesism, and we're talking there about discrimination against animals, in action, and the end of the dystopian world where humans are hunted and killed precisely in the same manner as animals. And the author says, I hope to show that human victims are often represented through animal terms and thus can be read as symbolic for the status of animals in society, and that the story world of these films is one of the extremist non-speciesist disposition. Anyway, check that out if you'd like. Again, we covered that many years ago, but I thought it was, the horror often sort of brings up the idea of like consuming human flesh and, kind of challenging animal consumption, maybe indirectly, but they also gave the example of humans kind of being hunted like animals and, lots of interesting stuff when it comes to horror. But we're not going to talk about horror so much. So, let's get on to this book or manga. The Darwin Incident by Shun Yumezawa. And, this book I did just reading about it is the winner of the prestigious Manga Taisho and Excellence Award at the Japanese Media Arts Festival. Yeah, I was just kind of interested in that it, like, it seems like, and Claire can speak to this better than me, but it seems to be like not just a book for like animal rights activists, even though it's obviously maybe going to be particularly of interest, but it seems like it's perhaps broken out beyond that. Would that be fair? Or
yeah, well, yeah. with manga, because manga's not very much a genre as it is like a platform to talk about a lot of different issues.
Mm-hmm.
So when it was originally written, it was probably written in that guise of like a type of genre that was outside of the norm, because I know the magazine that it was published in normally does strange topics that you wouldn't see in usual genres, like battle genres and all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would love to know more of the author's view. I did try looking reading about them online, but it seems they're private. So in terms of their personal views, I wasn't able to look much into it.
Yeah, I looked up the same thing and couldn't find much either. Yeah, yeah. I was interested. But definitely is definitely at the very least someone who's interested in these issues. I think that's at the very least. Do you want to maybe start off just a little bit about the book before we get into the sort of, well, I mean, I was going to say before we get into animal rights themes, but they're pretty central. But yeah, do you want to talk a bit about the book?
Yeah, so the Darwin incident centers around a half-human, half-chimpanzee 15-year-old. And at his birth, he was in a laboratory. He was, I wouldn't say rescued, but an animal liberation organization went in, attacked the laboratory for its animal issues. And from that incident, the main character, Charlie, was saved. Going to 15 years later, that same animal group is now terrorizing places in New York. So, like, the first scene we see is it's just a normal restaurant by the looks of it, and they bomb it, send their message, you meat eaters shouldn't be doing this. And a lot of that retaliation goes back to Charlie because he was such a news-wide report back when he was saved. Mm. So he has to take a lot of the criticism from his from other students at his school. And there's more to it than that. The organization obviously want to talk to him again and sort of bring him over to this animal rights group. But yeah, growing up, he was brought up by vegan parents. So Charlie, the main character, is vegan.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're talking about an organization, and the news articles are saying this vegan terrorism group. So yeah, the main central plot is all about veganism, which is very, very interesting to me. It's not, because veganism is, in most shows, it's sort of like a side plot or something that's brought up briefly, whereas this one has really brought it to the front.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I guess in terms of, I mean, you've already raised some as well, but anything that stood out to you in terms of the book, Ruby?
I mean, obviously, I research veganism in Japan, so this is of particular interest to me. I've only read the first two chapters. I really want to keep reading.
Mm.
What I find super interesting about this manga is that it's written by a Japanese person, but it's set in America.
Mm.
And I guess just kind of the research that I do and what that makes me immediately think of is that, oh, they're kind of thinking about veganism as something that happens in America but not in Japan, which is coming to be a central theme of my thesis a little bit, that veganism is kind of like a foreign issue. But I think also the way that, I mean, obviously this is one person's opinion, we can't extrapolate too much from it, but it also made me think about how Charlie, the main character, he's a vegan, but he's very kind of like nonchalant about his veganism and his views as to what other what humans should eat, basically. And there's like a line that he says where he's like, go ahead and eat whatever you want, because these students are coming up to him and kind of like attacking him about his veganism and be like, vegans, like, you did this. and then he says, you know, like, I'm a vegan, I've been vegan since birth, but go ahead and eat what you want. Birds, cows, pigs, fish, human beings. And then the other person who attacked him got really, real upset about that. And then Charlie says, why is it that it's only humans you can't kill and eat?
Mm.
So I thought that was really interesting that he's kind of like nonchalant about it, but also is kind of drawing that comparison between like human flesh and animal flesh. And obviously as like a half human, half chimp, he kind of feels like he's got a foot in both worlds, I suppose. But yeah, I suppose the way he's kind of like nonchalant about it, in contrast with like the way that the animal rights group is so, well, you know, that they're violently like protesting meat consumption, is, I think, also reflective of how like animal rights activism is viewed in Japan a little bit, and probably across the world as well, that like, you know, animal rights activism is something you shouldn't do. Like, if you want to be vegan, that's private and that's personal and you can do that. But it's not like a point that you should be making. And obviously I'm not saying that we should go and bomb a steak restaurant, which is what happens in the manga. But yeah, it's interesting that they've kind of created this like extremist kind of animal rights organization. And also they all wear like masks like from Anonymous for the Voiceless
Because I thought of the movie V for Vendetta.
That's what I thought, right.
I was thinking of like Anonymous for the Voiceless because they wear the exact same mask. So I was it's like they've created this like boogeyman kind of.
Which is like an interesting kind of comparison, because like Anonymous for the Voiceless are, you know, very just like encouraging people to go vegan. There's like, it's weird. I don't know if they're like, that's what they're doing now, but if they don't get their way, maybe they'll do like, it's just kind of a weird kind of association if they were thinking along those lines. And I feel like, again, my research kind of more focuses around Australian animal activism and in the US as well. But yeah, I think back to, there was like I don't know if militant's the right word, but like a protest around, it was kind of based around the, I think it was 1 year anniversary since Dominion, the documentary which exposes animal exploitation in Australia. And there was a protest on the corner of Flinders and Swanson, which shut down traffic and those kind of things. And yeah, one thing I sort of analysed after that was a lot of discussion about like good vegans and bad vegans, and the idea of like, oh, they're bad, they're protesting it. But yeah, similar to Ruby's research in Japan, and we'll put a link actually to the discussion I had with Ruby about her research on veganism in Japan too, if you want to look into that. But yeah, you mentioned in Japan, it's often lumped in with gluten-free and those kind of things. As like, why would, if you can't eat gluten, why would you stage a protest about people eating gluten, right? Like, so if you're kind of framing veganism in that sense, like, it kind of doesn't make much sense. But yeah, I guess one thing I noticed out of that is these discussions about good vegans and bad vegans in the media and that kind of thing. I was like, yeah, without going too much on an academic tangent, but there's a theory called the radical flank effect, where you kind of have like an extreme message and that makes a more moderate message seem more acceptable. And so in a way, like those people protesting, shutting down traffic, etc., they kind of like took the hit in a way, like got the pushback from society. But those who are kind of quietly going about their veganism or having like polite conversations with friends and family and colleagues and those kind of things, like they got the benefits, because then it was like, you're the good vegans. And kind of my point was like, the fact that veganism was good wasn't really said before that. It was just like, it was maybe neutral, maybe for some people even negative, but like this sort of depoliticized veganism became more accepted because the alternative was seen as like this militant kind of veganism. And I know you mentioned in the book, Claire, that they go through different sort of factions in the animal movement. Did you get a sense of, was it supporting different factions or just kind of laying them out? Did you get a sense of sort of which side they came down on, and those different sort of strains of veganism, different forms of animal advocacy?
I think the manga is just really trying to show how broad the vegan community is. It's like showing people, because I don't, in a, like the whole manga is about veganism, but in a strange way, I don't feel like it's sort of catered to us. So I think it's really showing, you probably, it's showing like the audience, here's the stereotype that you are thinking of, but let me give you another 7 examples. Like, it's not just, it's trying to show the broad community of veganism and how, yeah, there's activists, there's people who are just trying to enjoy their life. And it is, because they do actually talk about, in a offhand way, the vegans that just have their private conversations, because the terrorist organization are sort of trying to saying, oh, this is going to get the armchair activists to hopefully make a move, which is probably what I am. Like, I don't even try to sort of push veganism onto my family or anything like that. So when I read it, I sort of agree, because there is a conversation between one of Charlie's new friends and Charlie's parents, because she says, do you think I should be vegan? And at first the mom is just like, no, you shouldn't. We just do that. But then the dad comes in being like, no, I think you should. And here's my reasons why. Mm-hmm. And so it does, even for the armchair activists, it shows that even they have slightly different opinions on how it should go about.
Yeah. And I do, like, speaking to people who are involved in that protest, like they were saying, sort of the idea of that more militant protest is to get people to actually pick a side, if that makes sense, even if it's an anti-animal position. But the idea of challenging that idea that, you know, veganism is like gluten-free. So if you have someone who's gluten intolerant, you provide gluten options. If you have someone over who's vegan, you provide vegan options. But it's like, it's a bigger, like there's an individual or individuals involved in this, actually getting people to pick a side and go, no, I'm anti-vegan, is still kind of making it more of like a social justice issue. And I would also say, like, your point about not necessarily having those conversations, I do think just living by example as a vegan can be very powerful. I've had, yeah, at least some examples of friends I've never really made an effort to talk to about veganism, but they know that I'm vegan and have become vegan just because, like, it just puts it on the radar of just like, oh, like, why are they doing that? And, like, I get on with that person other ways and I agree with them in other ways and kind of thinking, well, they seem to be healthy. They don't seem to need, like, it's just, I feel like just having that, just being someone who's just living by example can be quite powerful in itself as well.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Like I said, I don't really bring it up and somehow it still manages to come up once a day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, there is a thing of, like, how do you know a vegan? Like, they'll tell you they are. And I remember speaking to a comedian who's vegan. He was saying, like, well, that has to be proved true, because if someone doesn't mention they're vegan, you don't know they're vegan, right? Like, so you could have met someone not brought up veganism and they were like, oh, well, they're a good person, they're not a vegan. It's like, well, I just didn't. Yeah, anyway, that's an aside. But let's, I feel like there's plenty more to discuss around the book, but we are due for a song. So let's play the second song. Is this one from you, Ruby, or Claire?
This is me, yeah.
Yep, so Melbourne Bitter by Cousin Tony's brand new Firebird. I quite like that. Yeah, yep. Anything you want to say about the song?
Just that it's a great song about Melbourne, and it's written by a Melbourne-based band, and it's a really good song.
Cool.
That's it.
A little bit of music, local music, and you're listening to Freedom of Species on 3CR Community Radio. Welcome back to Freedom of Species on 3CR Radical Radio. Today on the show, we're talking about representations of animal rights issues in the media. And right now, we are discussing the manga, The Darwin Incident by Shun Yumezawa. Sorry about the pronunciation. I guess one point that stood out to me from reading it was, yeah, this is probably nitpicking a little bit, but when the animal rights activists saw the chimpanzee, they said, "What did the bastards do to it?" And they use that language "it" quite a bit. And again, we don't know much about the author, but I wonder if that was just like, you know, like maybe they're not an animal rights person, or maybe they are, but like, again, we can kind of all internalize this stuff. But but then afterwards they said she's pregnant, but like that use of "it" towards animals like didn't seem like consistent with animal rights activists. But again, it can happen just because we're kind of raised with that language. Moving away from that language myself, it did once put me in an awkward situation. So I was walking my dog and it was like a mum with like two kids and a dog. And like my dog was walking and I was referring to her dog. I was like, do they want to say hi? Because like about the dog, but because I said they associate with two, and then they thought I meant do the kids want to say hi, and like then she thought I was like a random guy going up like trying to like, you know, engage with the kids, which I didn't want to do. Like I just wanted to like, you know, check that their dog wasn't aggressive or whatever, so I could take my dog up to them. But people are used to like you're referring to dogs as its in a lot of cases, so that kind of threw them off, I guess. But was there anything in the book that kind of lent you either way in terms of like whether it was kind of written by someone who, you know, supports animal rights? It seemed like it probably did, but I don't know. But yeah,
I think if you do, I think you would have to be if it's the center of the whole book. I know with a lot of different genres, like in terms of like other manga, like they have to be a little bit interested. Like I'm not, even with like, if you go into like sports manga, for example, you have to wonder, did this person that wrote about volleyball actually play volleyball? Are they interested in it?
Mm-hmm.
And you think about a lot of manga series, they might go for 20 or 50 volumes, which might take them, you know, 10 or more years to write about. Yeah. And so if you've chosen to write something like animal rights, you might be stuck in that job for 10 or more years. So you definitely have to be interested in it. And with the way it's being portrayed and considering that the main character is vegan, surely they're on the side of, you know, animal rights.
Yeah.
But it's in terms of calling the chimpanzee it, I wonder if that's the translator's choice of words.
I thought about that other dimension to it as well.
Because this series was originally written in Japanese, and I know with Japanese, their pronouns can sometimes be, then like they're not, they might not even be part of that sentence. They might have just been taken out just to make it easier to write.
Mm. Yeah, Japanese is quite contextual, and oftentimes you don't even use pronouns like in a sentence, so it's just kind of inferred from like the context what you're like, who you're talking about. So yeah, I'd be really interested to see like what the original Japanese sentence was. I'll have to look into that.
We'll do a fact check and get back to you.
But I know, like, even when my nephew was born, he was a human, but I was calling him it before I knew his gender.
True, that's true. I feel like people do that with babies, I guess. I feel that is true. I feel like I'm just particularly like sensitive to it around non-human animals because of the property status under the law and the way we do kind of use them as things. And I feel like that sort of language of like it kind of reinforces the like legal status and like sort of cultural status of them as objects, as its. Definitely. As well. Yeah.
You guys have just received a $50 donation from Latif.
Oh, okay, great. Thanks for that. Okay, cool. All right. Thank you, Latif, who just gave a donation to Freedom of Species and 3CR. So we are sort of at the end of our radiothon period now. I did want to quickly mention as well that this hybrid of a human and chimpanzee, the human Z they call them, kindred by Patricia Pacinini at the Science Gallery. I'll put a link up to that as well, but it basically has an orangutan like mother with uncannily human babies. Saying despite their differences, they gather together as a family. She was sort of, her point was, would they have to be more like humans to survive in terms of orangutans? But I'll put a link up there if anyone wants to look into that artwork as well. But just before we take off, Ruby, do you want to give a very quick shout out to Guardians Galaxy 3? But maybe we'll cover that in more depth another time as well.
Sure. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, no, I'd love to, because I think it's a fantastic film. And I was really surprised. Me and Claire actually saw this together when I was in the cinema watching it. Like, the whole time I was like whispering to Claire, I'm like, this is the most vegan Marvel film I've ever seen. Like, it's crazy. Even Peter, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, controversial organization, but even they like endorsed this movie and said it was like an animal rights masterpiece. It focuses very heavily on animal experimentation and has a very clear like anti-animal cruelty message, and kind of drives home the point that intelligence should not be the defining factor in whether or not we consider, whether a creature deserves moral consideration. And just to give like a quick quote about the movie from the director, James Gunn, he said about the movie, "Compassion is the answer to all your problems on this planet. And if you can have compassion for all living things, it really helps you to live a much more fulfilling life."
So, great. Yeah. So it sounds like it's worth checking out and perhaps worth discussing on a future show. So before we do take off, I wanted to give a quick update. Again, thanks to Latif for that donation live on air. But Freedom of Species, we had a target of $1,500 to contribute to the 3CR's Radiothon campaign. We have met that and gone over it. So we've got $1,850 so far. I guess that would go up to $1,900 with Latif's donation. So thanks to everyone. We had Ruth, Duck Raj, Brendan, Patricia, to name a few, who donated via our Give Now campaign. Also, if you do want to continue to donate to Freedom of Species or 3CR generally, while we as Freedom of Species have reached our target, 3CR is still getting there but isn't quite over the line yet. So 3CR is working hard to reach $275,000 to keep the station in general going. And we're over $220,000. But yeah, we can still get a bit more to get over the line. So if you donate to the Freedom of Species Give Now, that will go towards that, helping 3CR to get that $275,000. And yeah, I did want to briefly mention in terms of the supporting 3CR, we're going to finish up with the song No War by Lowkey and Styles P. This is from the album Soundtrack to the Struggle 3. And it does mention No War on Iran, which was released actually before the recent bombing of Iran, but it's obviously been spoken about for some time. And yeah, you'll hear a lot of coverage around that issue that you won't hear on other forms of media here on 3CR. One show I wanted to give a particular shout out, which I've enjoyed listening to on 3CR, is Democracy Now. It's not a 3CR specific show, but it is played via 3CR. It's a US-based show. That goes out on 3CR Mondays 9 to 10 a.m. And that has sort of a focus on global politics, but a US focus. But very critical. And yeah, I was hearing recently that that Iran has signed up to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, but the US and Israel hasn't, which I thought was quite ironic considering what's going on. But again, this song deals with that. You hear lots of more critical coverage about US imperialism, about Israel's action as well around in Palestine, in Iran and elsewhere as well here on 3CR. So stay tuned for that and support if you can. That is just about all we have time for today. If you want to give us any feedback on the show, you can email freedomofspecies@gmail.com. And yeah, you can also find us on social media as well. Stay tuned for rotations. Here's some music show coming up. But thanks so much for joining me, Claire and Ruby, and for bringing in your shows and books and mangas, whatever. Yeah,
yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
All right. So, yeah, we're going out again. This is Lowkey and Styles P with No War, a very relevant song in this time. And stay tuned for rotations after this to hear a little bit more music as well.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.